Want some, get some.
How about those friggin' pirates?
Yes, I am a pirate.
You have to go with the pirates, because, of course, they have cannons and everything.
It's a pirate's life for me.
Be proud of who you are and what you are. You're a pirate.
It is a first down. Pirates.
Because when you're at East Carolina, you go for it every time. Or you don't coach at East Carolina, you don't come to East Carolina, you don't play at East Carolina with a weak heart. Write it!
I think I've ever been in a building as loud as that was. It was deafening in there.
You better go tell Mom. I can promise you that.
Painted purple all night long in Eastern North Carolina!
You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
All right, welcome into the Sports Objective. As we're here live on a Sunday night. I'm very excited to have with us a very special guest. We'll get into the second. But ladies and gentlemen, it's always a lot of fun to talk to my buddy on air, off air. I'm talking about Kyle from the Grange Barber. What's up, dude?
What's going on, guys? This is getting closer and closer to the start of both college and high school football season. And when we talk to Brandon here in a minute about how things are going to Southeast Raleigh, is they're getting ready to kick off their season on the 23rd, and the Pirates kick off their season on the 31st. So, you know, practice in full swing. First scrimmage yesterday for the Pirates. So a lot to talk about.
No doubt. The offensive coordinator for Southeast Raleigh, the Bulldogs, and former running back for Conference USA champion East Carolina Pirates, Brandon Simmons. What's up, man?
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Glad to have you. And as a matter of fact, like Kyle said, we're very excited about high school football starting. It just seems like it's a week later. Is there a reason behind that? I've been wanting to ask you all day, Brandon.
Man, look, the way things are now, all these seasons are pretty much merged together. So to be honest, I mean, that's just how it feels. It's just one big season.
No doubt about it. We're excited about it. In fact, Martin County High School, they have now the Gators. I'm going to be calling the games this year on the radio. We were doing it last year on the Sports Objective. We'll have that link on the Sports Objective where you can listen to that. It's WIAM 900 and 92.1 FM. It's classic country, a great format, and we're very excited to have that and working on a color analyst. So Brandon Simmons won't be able to do it because he's going to be on the sidelines in Southeast Raleigh, but we'll get our play-by-play. We have the play-by-play being myself, yours truly, and we're working on that, but looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun in less than 2 weeks. Hard to believe high school football is right here. We'll be talking about that in just a minute. But the guys in purple and gold had a scrimmage, the first scrimmage for fall camp, so we wanted to have Brandon back on, not only to talk about, he's going to do give us two for one. He's going to be talking about high school football and his expectations for his season. Plus, we have, of course, the Pirates. And Brandon, out of the gate, I wanted to ask you, what is it like this time of year for people behind the scenes for fall camp and that first scrimmage? What do you think's going on there from your perspective?
Oh wow. A whole lot. You know, it's funny because the other day I was just talking to a few of my buddies. We were reflecting about preseason and you know, being cooped up in rooms for like 2 weeks. No outside influence, just surviving right now. There's a lot of opportunities for guys, and I'm confident when I say this that there's a lot of guys that looks for the opportunity to make plays. You know, there's a lot of talent, and there's a lot of expectations. So, you know, you just have to take it one day at a time.
Yeah, obviously the thing that most people are talking about the most is the quarterback battle. Will it be Hauser? Will it be Jake Garcia? Coming out of the first scrimmage, looking at the notes, Stephen Igo from Hoist Colors, 24/7 Sports, things he said. A lot of picks thrown yesterday by both quarterbacks. Sounds like a lot of it had to do with, continuity with the offense, trying to run a lot of different things, trying to figure out what's working, and the way this offense runs, the speed of this offense, you know, I think they need to name a starter sooner than later to get the continuity down with the offense, whether that be Garcia or Hauser. Probably after next week's scrimmage, they will. You being a coach at the high school level, Brandon, what is that evaluation process like, your offensive coordinator, for evaluating quarterbacks? Obviously, it's different from at different levels. But, you know, what are they looking at right now? I mean, obviously, you want the guy who can manage the offense best, you know, turn the ball over the least. But, you know, there's a fine line between turning the ball over and making plays. If the guy that turns the ball over is also the guy who makes the most plays, what do you do? So how do you think that evaluation is going from your perspective as a high school coach, you know, evaluating the quarterbacks?
Well, I will say this, you know, from being a quarterback coach myself, it just boils down to I'm looking under every stone. I'm asking the guys to you know, run the offense, you know, seeing how confident they are when a play is made and even when a mistake is made. You know, it's a never ending process. And there's a lot to grab onto, but like you said, eventually a decision must be made when it comes to that position, because you know the old saying, if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks. But I'm confident when I say this, I know that the coaching staff is, you know, evaluating, you know, who can run the show, who throws it, you know, best, deep, intermediate, you know, under, you know, screen game, who can handle the run checks, the RPOs. There's a lot that goes into it, but I'm confident that these coaches are going to continue to evaluate.
What do you make of the new headset rule where, you know, now the coaches are going to be able to talk to the quarterbacks up to a certain amount pre-snap? What am I trying to say? Almost like a crew chief and a race car driver. Some of this could be who communicates best with the OC.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because the other day I just watched like Days of Thunder, you know, old school movie in the 90s, and, you know, Tom Cruise and, you know, him, you know, driving the car and listening to the voice of reason. Yeah. And you notice at the beginning of the movie, there was a lot of turbulence. There was a lot of confusion, adversity, because at the end of the day, it all boils down to trust. And, you know, as a quarterback and as a play caller, you know, the quarterback, you're responsible for building that camaraderie with your play caller. And the play caller is also responsible for building that camaraderie with the quarterback. And sometimes the game might not be seen in the same light. You know, sometimes, you know, the quarterback might have an opinion on the way things should be ran and vice versa. And right now, that's what we're witnessing. We're witnessing a lot of the kinks. But I will say this, it's a lot easier now with headsets in your helmet than it was, you know, when I was playing.
Yeah, no doubt. I would think, and I see if you agree with this, that you got to make that decision after that next scrimmage next weekend, unless there's still just no clear cut winner. And obviously, you know, they're seeing things in practice in between the scrimmages. But I would think after next Saturday, you're 2 weeks to kickoff. You really need to go ahead and name your starting quarterback.
Oh, absolutely. And the sooner the better. But, you know, like you said, I mean, you know, maybe there's not a clear-cut quarterback. And the coaches want to be as transparent and as understanding as possible before they make that decision. Because, you know, like I know, once that decision is made, for the most part, it's pretty much made.
Yeah.
No doubt. And as far as Brandon, when we're talking about the two quarterbacks, there was four interceptions, and I think two of them were not their fault. But the defense itself, one of the things I was telling the guys earlier this afternoon is that defense is really good. We have a chance to have a top 25, top 30 defense for sure, which I know people are like, what? Dave's saying what? But it's really good. And so I think you have to give a little bit of slack to the offense, because – the offense is brand new as far as the coordinator, a lot of new pieces. And Kyle, I'm going to give you credit. I thought about you this afternoon when you said it may take a while for this offense to click in the first couple games of the season. So don't jump off the bandwagon thinking the Pirates are going to have a really bad year. It might be just two or three games before they really start rolling.
Yeah, definitely. No, it could be a situation where we're humming from game one. It could be game three. It could be game two. It could be game four. You know, when you're installing a new offense, as Brandon's aware. But I did want to tell you, you know, for people, if you hadn't had a chance to read the notes from the scrimmage, this is a lot of stuff, and we lost Dave. He'll be back. Brandon, I'm in charge until Dave comes back. So we're in trouble.
Oh, that's fine, man.
we're in trouble. But we had some standout receivers. This stuff comes from Stephen Igo 24/7. This is from his VIP membership post. So just want to be transparent on that. And Igo, if you don't want me sharing the information, just tell me and I won't. But he mentioned that standout performances from yesterday's scrimmage. Anthony Smith, these are wide receivers. Anthony Smith, Winston Wright, Taylor Savage, who I know is going to be playing tight end and receiver, Yannick Smith, and Mike, I'm reading here, small print, Levitt. That guy sounds familiar. Doesn't sound familiar to me. But Michael Levitt, we all had standout performances yesterday, along with Juwan Patterson. Also looked good at receiver yesterday, and particularly standing out on offense is Bond at running back. Igo said he looked amazing yesterday with the ball in his hand. Every time he touches the ball, and this is against our defense, we got a pretty stout D-line, that he can score. So if we can keep him healthy in this new offense with the splits the O-line takes, Bond can make some big plays. Dave says I sound like a robot. Do I sound like a robot to you, Brandon? Am I cutting out here?
No, you're fine on this end.
Okay, Dave, maybe it's just your end. But anyway, so Bond particularly looked good yesterday at running back, and you know, if we can keep him healthy, like I said, with the splits the O-line takes in this offense, he could have a big year. And you, of course, Rajah Harris wasn't mentioned here, but Brandon, you played running back, man. I love the way Rajah Harris catches the ball out of the backfield. What are your thoughts? You've seen Bond, you've seen Harris. What are your thoughts on both those players? And a player the size of Bond with his speed in this kind of offense, the tempo, wider splits with the O-line, the damage he could do in space.
Playing that position, you know, you're asked to do a whole lot of things. And from what I saw, you know, Bum, you know, he popped out, but his high school tape also popped as well. What I like most about him, and again, you know, kudos to all the guys, because at the end of the day, I will say that whoever is in, they are competing and they are battling. You know, but like I said, you know, with Bond, he does, you know, he does a lot of good things. You know, he's grown into his own. He has great contact balance. He catches the ball very well, and he does a lot of good things.
No, yeah, he does. And like I say, glad to see Harris back. Maybe he'll be back to, you know, after second year after knee surgery. Maybe he'll be back to, you know, freshman, sophomore type numbers. And again, really like to see Harris catching the ball out of the backfield. Always has really good hands. Dave mentioned defense earlier. Defense is going to be stout. D-line, you know, I don't know that the D-line's got the stars on it that you played with when you were here. You know, those D-lines in 08 and 09, both the championship years were stout. I don't know that it has that kind of, you know, star power, but the depth of talent on the D-line I think is as good as it's been at ECU in a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Now the defensive line depth is definitely higher. And again, the guys you're referring to, the C.J. Wilsons and the Lamba Joseph and all those guys, you know, they had a great run when I was there. But most importantly, I think what's happening right now is, you know, looking at the notes and you know, hearing about how the scrimmage went. We don't have a lot of, you know, coverage mishaps right now. You know, the secondary is on the same page. From what I understand, that the corners and the safeties did a good job of communicating and being on the same page. So no busted coverages. And again, it's against our offense, and they get a chance to see our offense all the time. But that was encouraging to be on the same page. So, for example, if the secondary, if everyone is playing a cover three, well, guess what? Everyone is playing a cover three, and there's no mishaps, okay? Last year at times, you know, the safeties would be playing cover three, but the corners will be playing man or cover two. That just can't happen. So to see that, you know, the secondary is coming together, And you know, to the point where they have refused a few cover sacks. That's huge.
Yeah, and you know, we got a lot of talent in the back end, just like we did the D line. You know, we got an All American at corner. You know, you got Magazoo back here coaching safeties. So I mentioned looking at the notes that the, you know, very tight coverage yesterday, a lot of contested balls. So that's good to hear. What do you make? You mentioned the notes from the scrimmage. What do you make of Mike Houston calling out young players after the scrimmage, saying we need some guys to grow up and be tougher? Just calling guys out. He didn't call them out by name, but he talked about some young guys that needed to grow up and be tougher. What do you make of that?
I mean, I love it because at the end of the day, this is a very important year. And, you know, when you sign up to come to East Carolina, you sign up to play in big time ball games, no matter how it's like. So if the expectation this year is to make a run at the conference, I absolutely see no issues with the coaches calling out players. And again, you know, it was not disrespect at all, but the standard is the standard. And, you know, if you want an opportunity to make plays, then guess what? When you get your opportunity, you must make your plays.
No, I agree 100%. And I have no problem with calling out players. And particularly in this day and age, when players are asking to be paid and NIL is out there, you want to be an employee, you might get treated like an employee. So, you know, I have no problem with it at all. You mentioned expectations. You know, obviously year six for Mike Houston. Last year, 2-10, we can be transparent and be real. He knows if he has a losing season, he's probably going to be gone. So is the expectation to compete for a conference championship? I think potentially, because, you know, when you miss Memphis, Tulane, and South Florida, three of the better teams projected in our league, a lot of people have those teams 1, 2, and 3 with, all due respect to UTSA, who's considered to be really good too. So you missed three of the four best teams in the league. So the conference schedule is very favorable. You know, I don't know what it's going to take. Is a bowl game enough? 6-6? Is that enough for Mike to get another year? Is it 7-5? I think Vegas has our over under at 6 wins, 6.5 wins. I think most people are taking the over. It is a very big year, and I think that's why you're hearing a lot of the, I'm not going to say panic by any means in Mike Houston's voice, but calling out, you know, players to be tough. And, you know, you can tell the intensity from him right now. There is talent there. The defense was good last year. You mentioned some blown coverage at times last year in the back end. But overall, last year, the defense was good. The offense was what let us down. If the offense can just be average, if the defense lives up to expectations, we should be a pretty good football team.
Absolutely. And at the end, to add on to what you just said, there's a lot of expectations because, you know, Coach Houston went out and selected the guy that he wanted to run the show on the offensive side. His OC comes from a great pedigree, being down there at Ole Miss. So, and the talent is there and the community is clearly behind the program. The resources are there. So the expectations is pretty high in Greenville, pretty high.
Yeah, John David Baker comes up for Ole Miss, was co-OC there, did not call the plays, obviously. This will be his first time calling plays. But, you know, great pedigree, like you mentioned. Grangely has an air raid background, then kind of the Lane Kiffin system, which is, you know, tempo-based system. It'll be interesting to see how much of we look like Ole Miss, how much we look like a traditional air raid-style offense. I think it'll be somewhere in between. I think the big thing is going to be tempo, from what I understand, with JDB and what he likes to run. Like the tight end room a lot. That's something we hadn't talked about. Got a lot of talent in tight end room. There are pieces here on the offensive side of the ball. If it can click early, it could be a nice, it could be a really nice season. I look at the schedule and a lot of people downplay the schedule. I think the schedule is a little tougher than people, particularly early, want to give it credit for. Norfolk State is Norfolk State. You should handle business there, although you can't take anybody for granted. Then after that, Old Dominion was a bowl team last year. People look at that Old Dominion game. Look, we were 2-10. Old Dominion circling that one as a win. Everybody circling ODU as a win for us. They were a bowl team last year. They upset App State in Norfolk last year. So you got ODU. Then after that, you come home and you played the before-mentioned App State, who has owned us recently. They're favored in the Sun Belt. You know, so very tough task with the Mountaineers. Then you go to Liberty, and everybody knows what Liberty did last year. New Year's Six bowl team. Then you come home and you play arguably your toughest conference game against UTSA. So it's a tough stretch after Norfolk State.
Absolutely. And again, you know, I personally think that the guys need to take it one game at a time. The coaches one game at a time. And, you know, looking at the schedule, it might seem a little bit easier than previous years. But the last thing that we all need is to look too far into the future and not take care of business and somehow play ourselves out of a bowl game.
Yeah, no kidding. I one game at a time. But I will say this, even Coach Houston, first post-practice news conference he did, or press conference, so we're going to be practicing in the afternoon a lot because we play Appalachian State at 4 o'clock. That's game three. So I guess some games are circled, but it's one game at a time. You know, everyone counts to bowl eligibility. You can't even overlook Norfolk State, particularly with a brand-new office. Although I do think it's, you know, not to take anything away from Norfolk State, I think breaking in a new offense is good to be playing someone like that game one.
No doubt about it.
And by the way, Brandon and Kyle, it's obviously you're not going to show everything during that Norfolk State game. When game two and three, though, like Kyle said, right after that Norfolk State game is a really tough part of the schedule. And if you can manage that toughest part of the schedule is kind of top heavy, if you will. Not to say the back half of the schedule that we can't lose games, but for certain we can do a lot better. Potentially down the road, you know, down towards the late October, the November part of the schedule. And we'll just have to wait and see. But I really am confident with JDB and Hauser and Garcia. Both are great quarterbacks. So especially compared to what we had last year. And it was a huge, I think it was a much bigger drop off after Holton Ahlers graduated than we realized.
Yeah, I kind of saw it coming, but I didn't think it was going to be that bad. I don't know anybody that thought it could possibly be that bad on offense. That's the worst offense I've ever seen in ECU history. It was atrocious, as we all saw. But, you know, like we've talked about, a lot of expectations for this year. Anybody else stand out to either one of you guys that need to be mentioned from the notes from the scrimmage from yesterday? Obviously, none of us saw the scrimmage, but just based on the notes.
I know you talked about the with Javius Bond. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of great parts on the offensive side of the ball. I know the wide receiver room is another one that we need to.
Yeah, we mentioned several receivers earlier that has standout days. One thing that Igo mentioned was pressure from the defensive ends. I'd have to look at the notes for the name, but. One of our DNs was wreaking havoc yesterday. Hopefully that is a trait of being able to get pressure off the edge and not a problem with the offensive line not being able to block. those were in the notes yesterday that we were getting pressure pretty consistently. So hopefully that's a good thing. But that's the one thing when you're playing against yourself, something to worry about. Another thing from the notes yesterday, and I've heard Houston really, really rave about our new special teams coordinator, which I believe name escapes me right now. I'm notoriously bad with names. Came over from Pittsburgh. He is really excited about special teams this year and the way we've looked on special teams, kick returns, kick coverage units, et cetera. So that'll be something to look out for. Will special teams be able to be a weapon for us this year?
Yeah, and absolutely. And, you know, I mean, what's the old saying? So if you win two to three phases, more often than not, you're going to win a lot of games. And, you know, that's very encouraging when you have the special teams that could pretty much give you a chance to win. I mean, for example, in a return game, if you're struggling to score points, if your return game is giving you shorter fields or scoring touchdowns or you know, positioning you to kick field goals, that's a major plus. And then punt block. I mean, hey, if you're struggling for field position, but your punt block team is pretty aggressive, I mean, hey, maybe we could steal a few, you know, touchdowns and you know, short fields. So
yeah,
that's very encouraging.
It could be something to hang your hat on, particularly early in the year. The offense is still trying to click. If you can block some punts, you got a guy like Winston Wright Jr. prior to his car accident injury when he transferred to Florida State. He was a hell of a kick returner at West Virginia. You got Bond that has the ability, the explosiveness, where he could be a hell of a punt returner, kick returner. So, you know, I hope the offense, you know, is clicking from day one. But if it's not, you know, special teams can give you a shorter field, create plays for you. So, yeah, definitely that's one thing Mike Houston has been consistently excited about is special teams and the new special teams coordinator. So that's positives. Dave, do you anything else to touch on ECU football before we transition over to a little Southeast Raleigh high school football?
Well, we do have, if you guys can help me out with this one, we actually have one that just popped up, a question. Put your questions in the comment section for YouTube and Facebook. Want to say hello to Chuck and a guy that's going to be helping us this year, Christian Bateman. Also, Brandon, hello to he and to him. Irving says, can you guys review the new kickoff rules? I understand significant changes are coming on the kickoff rules. Who is our next Henry Williams?
I'm not familiar with new kickoff rules in college football. There may be, and I'm just not aware of them. I know there is a new onside kick rule in the NFL, which I hope is never brought to college football, where you can only do an onside kick if you are trailing and you have to let the officials know beforehand that you're going to do an onside kick. But if, in terms of new kickoff rules, I'm not aware of what you're talking about. That could just be ignorance on my part. Brandon, are you aware of new kickoff rules in college football this year?
So if it's anything similar to what I saw in the NFL or the UFL, it basically means that they're going to eliminate the all-out sprint to, like, on the kickoff team. Basically, what it is the field is cut in half, and, you know, the kicker can kick the ball, but the return guys, they're the only guys that can move. And only once they catch the ball, the kickoff team can run and the return blockers can initiate. But that can't happen until the return guys touch the ball. So if that's the rule, then, like, if that's the rule that they're referring to, then all you really have to do is look at UFL, look at the way the ball is kicked off there. The NFL has adopted that rule.
Okay, I don't know if that's what he's referring to, if that is, in fact, being implemented in the Division I college football. It could very well be. I don't keep up with rule changes like that. Where is Bubba Rosenbaum when you need him? He would know for sure. But
he's asleep.
Yeah, so we'll get back to you on that. And sorry we can't answer that for you. I do apologize.
No doubt.
If, there you go. If that is what you're referring to, then it is what the UFL did this past year that the NFL is now implementing. And how did that affect the game? I didn't watch any UFL football this year, Brandon. How did it get, was it advantage return team, advantage coverage team, or was it just neutral?
More neutral. And I think the reason why they decided to implement the rule is because, you know, they're trying their best to eliminate the unnecessary concussions that comes from the kickoff team. And I will say that, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but a great number of, you know, concussions and big hits do occur on the special teams. And it's as simple as, you know, as the kicker's approaching kick, he kicks the ball as far as he can, but you're getting an all-out sprint to try to get the return guy down. Most times you're running through blockers to get there. And I think that football is trying to reduce that type of contact as much as possible.
Okay. Well, if that's what you're referring to, if that is the rule change that is being implemented into college, then Brandon just explained it to you. If not, then we're clueless. So, but anything else before we move over to high school football, Dave? Do we go ahead and acknowledge the ladies from Pitt County for winning the softball World Series in Greenville? It's good to. If you're going to host the thing, it's good to win it.
Yeah, not only that, but I'll tell you one thing. They need to have that on campus, ECU softball stadium, if possible, every year. Because
they hosted it today, right?
Yeah, because of the weather, because of Tropical Storm Debbie, it messed up the field where they were hosting there on Elm Street. Don't get me wrong, those fields are awesome, but it was very cool to have it this weekend. They made a great plan B of playing it there at ECU at the softball stadium. And I thought that just the whole look of that stadium is so nice. And it was standing room only. It was very cool to see that stadium. It was literally sold out, and they had people in left field. What would be the softball version of the jungle, if you will. It was pretty cool. I've never seen that before.
Yeah, I wonder how many cities, counties, Pitt County, have won the College World Series, excuse me, the Little League World Series in baseball, which I believe was in 99, and then win the Little League World Series in softball. That cannot have been done by too many places that you can claim both those titles, even though it's been, 25 years apart. Still pretty impressive.
Yeah, and they had another team that didn't make it quite as far. Like, it was 2016, I think that's right. But
I remember that.
It was 2016, I believe, off the top of my head. But yeah, Kyle, they have, with baseball and softball in Pitt County, is to say it's elite is an understatement. By the way, former pitcher, speaking of baseball, of East Carolina under Coach O, John White says college football has not adopted that new kickoff rule yet, reviewing it and possible for 2025. So,
okay, good, good deal. Well, no new kickoff rule for this year.
All right, there you go. So we still have that. I know, Brandon, like you said, you're a football guy, so you know more about obviously football than I'll ever know. And as far as concussions go, and I understand that part. I just don't want it to be where. And no offense to people with flag football, but I'm just worried that the football is going to get to where it's just flag football. I say that tongue in cheek, but yet it could happen.
Well, and I think a lot of it is, and it's more so the lawsuits, the constant lawsuits that the NFL has been dealing with for so many years. I think most of it is the direct result from that.
Brandon, what are you seeing in high school football? You're in a large area in Raleigh, Wake County, so it maybe doesn't affect you guys as much, and you're a magnet school. But, it seems like kids don't want to play football as much as they used to. You got parents being hesitant. I know our buddy Stevie Fly coaches up at Northeast Academy. It's 8-man football. He's got 10 players this year. 10 players.
Wow.
For his 8-man football roster. So everybody's going two ways. Are you running into that much? You see that there, speaking about safety with concussions, are you seeing where kids are wanting to play high school football less than they did at one time in your area, or is it not affecting places like Wake County as much?
Well, I've been a part of teams I'll say about maybe 2018, 2017, concussion scares were bothering a lot of people. But as for us, I mean, our numbers actually went up. And after speaking with a number of different coaches around the area, their numbers went up as well. I just think that, it's going to be held by a case-by-case situation. But I will say this with confidence that the high school football game is a lot safer than it's ever been. A lot of the language that my high school coaches and the coaches before that would use, we coaches can't use certain verbiage. And in order to coach on the field, we must be certified in, CPR heads up football. There's a lot of classes that we have to successfully pass before we can even step onto the field. So I will say that the game is as safe as it's ever been. And all sports have their highs and lows, but I do think that the high school football game, I think that football in general is safer now than it's ever been.
Yeah, it sounds like it's on the upswing. There you go, Justin Butts. They play 8-man football. Wayne Christian, and they got 40 players for their 8-man team. There, just about enough players to go and play 11-man football. But there's a few years ago, Northeast Academy beat Wayne Christian for the state championship back in 2020 with Mr. Stevie Fly as head coach. But
you know that
I don't think that's going to happen this year. You got 40 guys on your roster, think, Justin, and but, Northeast Academy's got 10.
Well, here for us, we have for Martin County High School football, the Gators. We have this is the best year we had in a long time, guys. Numbers wise, we have 56 guys on our roster. 56, and what killed us was not because of people being scared of football. It was COVID. COVID hurt us, obviously, and you can blame everything on COVID, but last year and this year, we're finally starting to see the numbers back up.
That's good. It sounds like high school football is on the rise then in terms of kids wanting to play, but I want to know why Wayne Christian isn't going to 11-man football.
Yeah, Justin,
yeah, you got 40 men. You got 40 men on an 8-man football. It's not even nothing to brag about. I mean, come on. Come on, Justin.
But look, hey, look at this again, Kyle. They won the state championship in 22, and they were runner-up in 20, and then the state runner-up last year in 8-man. So they must be doing something.
They got 40. They got enough teams to play, enough people to play 11-man football.
Are you saying Justin fixing to start 8-man football? I mean 11-man?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Wayne Christian needs to go to 11-man football. What that 8-man? You got 40 people on a roster. You playing 8-man football? Come on, man. Justin, get after you folks there at Wayne Christian. But anyway.
Well, I tell you one thing, Brandon, please. And here's one thing I want to talk to you about tonight. And I know I'm putting you on the spot when I ask you this. Can you help us understand the new classifications? Because that's something that.
You understand them yourself, Brandon.
I mean, it's like 50 different classifications now. I'm saying that sarcastically, but I know there's always been pretty much eight classifications in the way they had the 1A. And the reason they did that is because in football, you'd have a situation where you'd have a Williamston Riverside playing like a small, really, really small 1A school, and they didn't want that. So they split each one of the divisions, 1A, 1AA, 2A, 2AA, all the way up to 4AA. But now I'm still having a Justin says says it best. The new eight-man system sucks, he's talking about. Well, I thought he was talking about the classifications, but I just want to get your thoughts on that.
So are we going to 1A versus to 8A now instead of having AAs in it? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's all
easier
it is.
To understand.
Yeah, that's all it is. So instead of having 1A, 1AA, 2A, 2AA, it's just going to be 8A through 1A. That's all it's going
to
be.
And what makes more sense to me.
Yeah, yeah. And that's all it is. And what they're going to do is they're going to, you know, rank all the high schools, obviously, you know, the population in school from the smallest to the biggest, and then they're going to cut it into eight different divisions. That's all it's going to be.
Okay, that actually makes a lot of sense. So sometimes change is good. That makes sense based on population, 1 through 8. What is Williamson designated this year?
We're 2A.
What about Southeast Raleigh, Brandon?
We're 4A at the moment. We're 4A.
Okay. Now you say at the moment, do you expect to move up?
Actually, the last time I looked at high school T, they had us 7A, I think. So yeah, they had us in 7A. But you know, we won't know until the numbers are officially out. You know, there's a lot that can happen between then and now. But last time I checked, we were 7A, maybe 6A. One of the two.
So Justin's saying that Eastern Wayne, where he coaches, is a 2A, then they would move up to a 4A.
Justin, I live literally right down the road from Eastern Wayne. I'm gonna come say hey at practice one day.
Kyle's gonna try out for the team. Justin, what do you think? Can he be like Billy Madison and go back to school?
I'm not trying out for any team, Dave. Brandon, let's talk about Southeast Raleigh football. How is practice going? You're the office coordinator, assistant head coach. How's practice going? How are you guys looking for this year? You said you got some unfinished business to take care of. And who is coming up week one on August 23rd? Who's the first victim?
Oh, wow. First victim. Oh, I wouldn't say all that. First, as far as practice, you know, for us coaches and players, it's been a long process. I mean, we've been pretty much working hard since our season ended last year. You know, last year was the first time in about, you know, a while that Southeast Raleigh has returned to playoff contention. And once this year was over, a lot of the returning players were excited and ready to go. So we had a strong offseason, winter, spring, summer. Winter and spring, most of our athletes were a part of other sports. We're a 4A school, but we do encourage our athletes to be a part of as many sports teams as possible. And the guys that weren't playing a sport, they were hanging out with us. They were lifting and they were conditioning. We had a strong summer. We had good numbers. We did a lot of the 7-on-7, a lot of the lifts. There was a lot of stuff going on. I was very, very busy. Now for preseason, now we're actually in school right now. And we've been in school since July the 22nd. Unlike most people. Yeah, we are
year-round school. Okay.
Yes, absolutely. So we in school right now, and we have been in school for the past few weeks. But as far as the spirit of practice, when we were able to get outside, we got outside. I mean, like Eastern North Carolina, rain has been an issue. Heat has been an issue. But our guys never complain. We'll stay inside. We'll do a little bit of board work. We'll get a lift in. We'll do run throughs in the gym. But our guys never complained about it, and our coaches haven't complained about it as well. So we're very excited about how hard our guys been working. Next week, like you said, we do have our first game, and we are excited about our first game. But we have to get to our first game. Due to our scrimmage, so we're supposed to have a scrimmage on Saturday against Cardinal Gibbons. We had to bump that to Monday because we lost Friday. The weather messed up a lot of things, right, and we just had to adjust. But we have Cardinal Gibbons tomorrow on the scrimmage, and then Friday we scrimmage against Reagan at our Jamboree, and then next Friday we have our game. So we still have some things to clean up and to work through before we even make it to game one. But our game one is, opponent will be Enloe.
Hey, Kyle, did you hear they're actually breaking ground for the Brandon Simmons indoor practice facility at Southeast Raleigh, even before East Carolina got it?
I would believe it, actually. I would believe it 100%. So you play Enloe game one. Tell me about Enloe. Not even familiar with the name.
Oh, so Coach Clark, he's doing a great job over there at that school.
Where are they located?
In Raleigh, North Carolina.
Okay, so they're in Raleigh.
They're located in Raleigh. They're not too far from us. They're one of the older schools in North Carolina. They're known for graduating a lot of scholar athletes and scholars in general. And, Coach Clark, he's doing a good job over there. He's an alum from the program, and he's built the program from the ground up. He has athletes that are getting attention from college recruiters, and they do a good job of giving back to the community. So, we're excited about that game. We will be playing in a, the Southeast Classic, that's what it's called. So we will be playing for a bell. And our goal is to retain the bell.
I don't know why I hadn't heard of that school. I'm not that I know the Triangle schools by heart anyway, growing up in Eastern North Carolina. I know all the schools in Eastern North Carolina, but it sounds like it's a tradition rich program and a tall task in game one. But you said Cardinal Gibbons scrimmage Monday, and then you said you have a jamboree this Friday. Is only one other team taking part in your jamboree, or is it a multiple team jamboree?
Oh, it is a it is a multiple team jamboree. It is. I mean, top to bottom. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot of teams that are competing at a high level, and we're blessed enough to host it. So, just to give you an idea of the teams that will be competing, and I want to pull up my list to make sure that I cover everybody. So game one will be Sanderson versus Holly Springs. Sanderson, that's the traditional power in Raleigh. Matter of fact, they sent a few guys into the NFL, and Coach Brooks did a great job. Holly Springs, they're always in contention to win their conference. So we're going to lead off with them. And then after that, we have us versus Reagan. And Reagan, their quarterback, just committed to NC State as a dual sport athlete, baseball. and football. And from what I understand, they got a primetime receiver as well, and they're well coached. And then, you know, you have Heritage versus Panther Creek, and you know, Coach Wallace Clark, you know, he's doing a good job over there, you know, at Heritage. And you know, there's just a lot of stuff going on there. But after that, we have Gardner versus Athens Drive. And you know their head coaches are doing a great job there as well. So you know, that's our 2024 Bulldog Bash lineup. You know, when we're not playing, we're going to be working our jamboree, but we're excited about hosting some of the best teams in the region.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm assuming that's open to the public. Everybody can come out and buy tickets.
Oh, absolutely.
Panther Creek. Please tell me their mascot's the Panthers.
The Catamount.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Well, that's just horrible. the mascot's built in. How do you not call yourself the Panther Creek Panthers? Okay, all right, whatever. Dave, how did Martin County decide on the Gators? Ain't no damn Gators in Martin County.
Well, so the
Womp. I mean, I'm not saying there couldn't be a Gator. You know, Gators go that far north. We have the Alligator River. I've seen Gators in between. I've seen Gators on those ditches on the way to the Outer Banks on 64, but I've never in my life. I grew up, you know where my dad lives. Grew up on a farm with a swamp in the back, and never once seen a Gator in Martin County. So how did y'all decide on the Gators?
Well, I've actually heard a couple people tell me, which I don't believe, but that's a whole nother story, that there's Gators that's been spotted in the Roanoke River.
I will ask my dad.
The scuttlebutt is, see, the problem we have is that, not problem, but as far as the mascot, a lot of us wanted Mustangs. However, you know, Martin County Mustangs, but because we knew this day was coming where we were going to consolidate into one school, Martin Community College is the Mustangs. So the Martin Community College Mustangs. So they didn't want to compete with the community college and the high school having the same mascot. So the next best thing for them was, as far as what the kids wanted and what the administration wanted, is the Gators. So, you know, hey, and the football stadium is down in the swamp. It's like down. So that's why they went with it. You know, hey, whatever the mascot is, I'm good with it, because I'm like,
Where is, I, you know, I don't even know, you know, I've been, you know, I visit, I go back to see my dad, but where's the high school located? Is it near where Williamson High used to be located? Or
Yes.
Okay. All right, cool. All right. Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so, you know, we got Dave calling high school football. We got Brandon coaching Southeast Raleigh. You know, Stevie isn't here, but he's the head coach of Northeast Academy. It's a lot of high school football. And Stevie, actually, you know, he's not here, but I'll promote it this Friday. They start their season 8-man football. I forget who he said they play. He told me, and the school is slipping my mind right now. So there is some private school football kicking off this Friday throughout the state. But guys, got anything else we want to talk about? Anything else?
Yeah, Irving has a question for Brandon. If you have a question for Brandon, we have a few more minutes. So I know Brandon, I didn't know that you were already, I learned something tonight. I know it was year round. I thought that you guys were getting ready to start up. So, let's see. Irving has a question for you, Brandon. He says, hey, Brandon, as a former player, how crucial is indoor practice facility? I've seen some excellent teams here thrive without one.
Yeah, but everybody else has one now.
Yeah. So I think that it's important, because, you know, it makes practice experiences a tad bit more enjoyable, especially whenever it's raining and all, you know, snowing potentially. It's not a see-all be-all, but Black Cow said more and more programs are investing in indoor facilities. So, you know, you don't have to be the first to get one, but you definitely can't be the last.
Yeah, when Coastal Carolina is building one, App State's had one for years. You know, I think here's my problem with it. We've raised, what, $18 million of the $21 million? Build the damn thing. If you can't build it for $8 million, come on, just cut out a couple things. Tulane built one for $7 million. I mean, it does not have to have every bell and whistle. Houston alluded to it without saying it the other day. He said, if we just had somewhere to practice in with a roof and lines on the field,
that's it.
I mean, you just need for it to be functional. I don't want a picnic shelter like UAB, but, you know, it just something functional. And at this point, I think most of your money after that's built, you know, you got to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak. But honestly, in this day and age, most of your money going forward needs to go to NIL. That's what's going to get you players. You need a indoor practice facility for the purpose that it serves to get in out the weather. Yeah. But I really don't think it gets you recruits anymore. I think kids are going to go where they want to go. Correct. But the other thing is money. I mean, just like, you know, Brandon, if your principal or AD came to you and said Coach Simmons, we can spend $50,000 to improve the facilities here at the high school, or we can give you a $50,000 raise. Which one are you going to choose?
Well, Brandon wants us to win. So.
So, I mean, it's you know, I think NIL really, but we got to get the indoor practice. We got to get the indoor practice facility built for it to
be. Yeah.
And right now, I think particularly where it's hurting us now, and I understand the point people are saying we've won without them, and we can continue to win without them. But right now, particularly during installation, when you're trying to install on Community Christian, okay, that's who Northeastern's playing, Community Christian. But when you're trying to install an offense right now, which is what we're trying to do, that is particularly to me when you need an indoor practice facility, because you're trying to learn, you're trying to install. It is hard to concentrate and install things when it's pouring rain. You know, it's harder to learn, you know, when you're practicing and repeating things, but when you're trying to install and learn, I think that's really probably where an indoor facility could benefit you the most.
Yeah, you know, guys, when Coach
Brandon, Montgomery, do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. And so the reality is, if you pride yourself on being a fast tempo team that sprays the ball all over the yard, it's a lot easier to do that under ideal weather. If it's not raining outside, but if it's raining outside, that limits what you can call, that limits what you can do. And you know, installing from inside is a major plus. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, when Montgomery, his last year, I'll never forget, in 2018, there was 9 days in the fall where they were rained out. They couldn't practice for nine different days. So think about that. If we have an indoor practice facility, we don't have to worry about that anymore.
To me, the money's raised. I'm sorry, but I just build it with what we have. Yeah. I mean, maybe I'm ignorant. Maybe something needs to be explained to me. John Gilbert will welcome you back on the podcast anytime and, you know, get detailed information on why we just can't build it with what we have. You know, you could readjust what you planned on spending. Spend less and build it. I mean, I don't understand. I mean, we have $18 million raised, correct, Dave? Am I wrong on that number?
What's that?
The amount we have raised for the indoor practice facility at this point, was it an $18
million? No, we're way over that, like $21, $22 million
now. So what is the goal to build it? What was the amount?
Well, that's the thing, is that it keeps if we don't go ahead and start it, we need to lock in a price. Okay.
Well, just build it. Build it. If you can't get that thing built for that amount of money, come on, give me a break. I don't know what we're doing. But anyway, I'll get off that tangent. Brad, what do you foresee this year just for Pirate football from the outside looking in? You follow the program closely as a former player. What do you think? What would be a successful season to you for the Pirates this year?
7 to 8 wins. 7 to 8+ wins. Returning to a bowl game.
And winning,
absolutely.
It's a minimum 7 wins
and a bowl. Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. I agree with that.
Yeah, I think we're gonna do well. I tell you what, guys, the amount of attention that's been given to this team, and you were talking about, Kyle, you were talking about earlier, the reason this team is gonna be successful is because of the NIL money that we had this year compared to last year. Yes, it's going to help to have the new offensive coordinator and the new scheme and all that, but you also have to have the players to be able to execute those plays. And I think you're going to see that because we have the NIL, We're going to go back bowling this year for sure. I think it's a question, like Brandon said, I think it's a question of how many wins. We're definitely going bowling, but it's going to be which bowl we're going to be playing in. Is it like the Cure Bowl, or is it going to be a really big bowl or somewhere in the middle?
Yeah, hopefully. You know, I think you got to win at least six, but, you know, I think seven plus really is what we need to do this year. But, you know, time will tell. A lot of football. We're just getting started. You know, you got high school football starting up. You got week zero of college football coming up on the 24th. You know, I'm ready. I'm ready to, you know, I'm not a big NFL guy, so the preseason NFL stuff don't do much for me. So I am all ready for college football and, you know, look forward to high school football starting too.
Yeah, I tell you what, with the NFL, I didn't realize it's 29 preseason games, and it just like, I mean, I'm a huge NFL fan, but, you know, really you don't get to see a lot of the stars play because of they don't want to get them injured or whatever. But I can't wait for that being the week after Labor Day, and we'll have to wait and see. Brandon, you know, with the Falcons, they've got with Penix, and you also have Taylor Heineke. They played for the Redskins, and then now with the Falcons, that played at ODU, and they have Kirk Cousins. So, you know, we'll see how they do. Maybe one day Kirk will win the big one. I don't know, but
maybe.
I have some friends that are Falcons fans, and I feel bad for them. But anyway, and I know they feel bad for me because my team, the Commanders, the Redskins, haven't won in many years. So, and when it comes to the Super Bowl, that's what I look at. For sure. Brandon, do you have anything before we go? We appreciate you so much, man, for coming on. Guys, did you one final question. Did you guys watch the Olympics at all?
Yes.
Very little. Glad to see Simone Biles, you know, win gold again. She's a legend at this point. My favorite part of the Olympics, probably the breakdancer from Australia has gone viral for doing the worst thing in the history of the Olympics. It's just, I mean, I don't want to make fun of the girl, but my goodness, I don't know. I think I could do that. I mean, what was she doing?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, the Paris Games, they did a great job with the facilities. They did a great job.
I heard a lot of complaints about the facilities. No air conditioning.
So. And what about and another thing, guys, this was interesting. I felt my age over the last couple of weeks, because how about the fact that you have now with Peacock, you can stream like any sporting event.
Yes.
I mean, it was overwhelming. It was like before. Yes. I grew up in the days where whatever was on primetime or whatever was on, that's all you could watch. And now, man, I just found myself, okay, I could be watching this, but wait a minute, over here is gymnastics. Wait a minute, over here is it was a little bit, it's different consuming, as they say. I'm going to have to get used to that, but really excited. I'm going to try to make the trip out to LA in 28 because that's going to be the last probably time that I'll ever be able to see, definitely on our soil, the Summer Olympics. Maybe I would have to travel abroad, but as far as the Olympics, it's 40 years ago was the last time in LA. And of course, 96, we had it in Atlanta, but we'll see. And you know, what year is it? We've got the Olympics coming for Winter Olympics. They're coming back to Salt Lake City. I think it's 2032.
Yeah, I think it is something like that. But like you said, I mean, I actually enjoy the Olympics, and a lot of that might be because I'm also a track and field coach as well. So getting the chance to watch the relays, you know, the 4x2, the 4x1, the hurdles, the long jump, the triple jump. Even today, got a chance to catch up on some basketball. Like, I actually watched our female USA team, you know, play. And then yesterday, I watched the guys play. And then lastly, in my room, because, you know, we have TVs and all that, but I was, you know, I got a chance to pull up the Peacock app. And when my kids were working independently, you know, I'll have the multi-screen up so that I can follow it. And if there was something entertaining going on, I'll blow it up. And I enjoyed it, absolutely. But like you said, there's a lot of content. Oh, my goodness, there's so much content. But I was able to zero in on what I wanted to see.
And I think that's the key, is that before, even when they had the Atlanta Olympics in 96 and 84, you were at the mercy of them, whatever they're going to show you. And they already had, you already knew ahead of time. They saved, and I understand why they had to do it back that way back then, but
you already knew. Did you just put a chew in your mouth?
No, it's a piece of gum.
Okay.
So they knew what to, they knew, like, you know, the gymnastics to have that at night. The problem was by 96 that you already knew that the men or the women won. And so it's like,
I watched that as it happened. I had no idea that Kerry Scruggs had broke her ankle and was going to hit the landing with one leg. So I saw all that live. That's one of my favorite Olympic memories, is watching her. You can do it. Bella Carosi, Sakari Scruggs. Also another, I love that 96 Olympic gymnastic team, the Dream Team. Or no, not the Dream. What was it called?
Oh, yes.
Not the Dream Team. That was basketball. 96 Olympic team. They had some special name. You had Dominique Mociano. I remember her doing the Devil Went Down to Georgia floor routine. That 96 female gymnast team was special.
No doubt. And we'll have to wait and see how, obviously,
the Fabulous Five, is that what it was? I don't remember. Somebody help me out in the comments. They had a nickname.
That I don't know off the top of my head. I remember Richard Jewell and all the craziness at the Olympic Park and that bombing at Olympic Park. I think it was Eric Rudolph instead of Richard Jewell, but he went through all that.
Yep. Yeah, they made a movie about that recently. Yep.
All right, Brandon, good luck to you, man. I know that we're very excited for you. Obviously excited for high school football, college football, pro football. Just the fact that football, it seems like it's been an eternity since the Super Bowl. I know everybody loves the UFL. Or a lot of people do. I think that was, let's see if anybody has that.
Not the U.S. Army, Dave. Did you hear about that?
What's that?
Oh, yeah.
The U.S. Army is suing the UFL, or potentially suing the Magnificent Seven. Thank you, John. That was the Olympic team in 96, the gymnast. But the Army is potentially looking to sue The Rock and the UFL for, they invested around $12 million in the UFL. $6 million of that was going to be tweets from The Rock on social media, and The Rock did not meet that agreement. and they lost money and did not get one single recruit from UFL through the UFL. So it's very interesting.
No doubt. We'll have to wait and see what happens. I didn't know that. I will have to check that out. And read about that. I missed that somehow. But Brandon, good luck to you, man. We appreciate you coming on tonight. And we try to keep the show at an hour. So thank you so much and good luck. And don't be a stranger. Hopefully we get you back on during the season.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
No doubt. All right. For myself, Kyle, and Brandon, you've been watching and listening to The Sports Objective. Is TSO Sundays all summer long. And we'll see you next time. And as always, go Pirates.
You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.